This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.
Hello there, everyone out in the galaxy. This is the 37th episode of From a Certain Point of View. I am Josh.
I'm Adam.
And we are here to talk Star Wars today, as usual. And Adam, what have you been up to in Star Wars this week?
The only thing, kind of like last week, I watched the movie that we're going to be talking about today, Attack of the Clones.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as other Star Wars stuff, not a whole lot this week. Kind of a late week other than that, but I did watch Attack of the Clones through twice and watched a couple documentaries, so it wasn't a light week. Nice. Just not branching out very much other than Attack of the Clones.
Just some preparation for the show today.
Yeah.
I also watched Attack of the Clones last night with the commentary that had like the cast and crew and George Lucas all a part of that conversation. And Adam, I know that you also watched, did you watch Hamilton this week?
Yeah.
We were talking a little Hamilton before we started here.
Yep. So it would have been after the last recording because we recorded on the 3rd and then it came out on the 4th, right? Or did it come out on, I can't remember.
The 3rd.
Did it? 3rd. Okay. But I watched it after we recorded last week. So yeah, I watched it twice in the last week.
What were your impressions?
It was different when I first watched it because I wasn't ready for it to be all sung. I wasn't ready for that rhythm the whole way through. So once I watched it, I actually split it into two nights. I watched it through the intermission first night, and then I went back and watched the second act the next night. So the second act I enjoyed a lot more just because I was ready for that. And then the second time I watched it the whole way through, I was ready for it the whole way. So I enjoyed the whole thing through the second time. So but overall thoughts, it's incredible. It's really good.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think I mentioned last week probably that Brittany and I, you know, got to see it in Pittsburgh because Brittany won tickets to Hamilton, and I see my wife saying in the chat right now, Hamilton is amazing, just her two cents. And I'm gonna go ahead and say hi to my daughter Sydney because she was saying hi to me in the chat as well.
Hi Sydney.
But yeah, I mean, when we saw it live, we were blown away by it, you know, and I just continued to listen to the soundtrack over the next couple years after that, leading up till this point. And Adam, I'd mentioned to you that the cast in Pittsburgh was a different cast than the original cast. So it was kind of cool getting to see the original cast, you know, on Disney Plus with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Leslie Odom Jr. and Jonathan Groff and all those guys.
Yeah.
And gals. So it was, you know, it's outside of Star Wars, but an awesome thing to check out on Disney Plus.
So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Cam's in chat. He says he hasn't seen it yet. Doesn't seem like his cup of tea, but here's nothing but great things. And I'll tell you, and yeah, Cam, the whole thing is
it's
kind of hip hop. I don't know if I'd call
some
hip hop,
some R&B is a little bit of R&B sound in there too. Yeah,
yeah. There's some bluesy type songs. It's not all just R&B, but there is a rhythm through the whole thing. I'll say not all of the music is my cup of tea, but I enjoyed the whole thing. Lin-Manuel Miranda has this way of crossing genres sometimes, I think. You know, it definitely has its roots in hip-hop and even a little bit of rap. But it's never, even for me not being a fan of that type of music, it's very easy to listen to. So,
yeah, and I will say I wasn't even a fan of theater at all, really, or musicals or anything like that until I saw Hamilton. Yeah. And that kind of, you know, changed my experience and my opinion on it. But hey, anyway, let's get back to Star Wars and
Cam, there's definitely actual singing. There's really, really well composed songs. Actual like Broadway style songs. So
yes, absolutely. Great stuff.
Jonathan Groff just seals the show, I think, is his King George.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, every time he's on stage, he just kind of brings out that.
For anybody not familiar with Jonathan Groff, he is the voice of Kristoff and Sven in Frozen.
Yep.
So he was also on a really good show on Netflix called Mindhunter, by the way. If you haven't checked that out, I recommend it.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. So what's going on? We had a poll result. We had a poll last week.
Open-ended poll.
Kind of, yeah, connected to our Phantom Menace talk. Mm-hmm. You know, the poll question was name maybe like a favorite moment from the Phantom Menace. What is your favorite scene or moment? And I did promise that some of those answers would be included in this week's show. So here we go. You know, Cam Ray mentioned, who's in the chat right now, the pod race and seeing the various aliens and Tatooine residents, intense excitement and speed, Anakin winning, you know, as well as the final lightsaber fight, the choreography, the waiting game behind the laser gates, the score, everything. And, you know, of course, you know, the Duel of the Fates scene at the end was probably my favorite as well. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of votes for Duel of Fates, of course. Let's see here. What else? Duel of the Fates in Big Gooberfish, says Padawan of Christ. we had the Star Wars podcast replying as Maul and Sidious on Coruscant plotting against the Jedi right under their very noses. Literally the Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. Super short scene, but sweet and relevant.
That was also one of the first scenes that they filmed in that movie, which I found out last week.
Yeah.
I don't think we mentioned that. It's interesting, yeah. Kind of set the tone for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. We had the Force Losers podcast chime in with, this is the first time Maul engage. They liked the first time Maul engages Qui-Gon on Tatooine. It was the first time a Jedi clashes sabers with a Sith in a millennia and lives to tell the tale. We had, besides Duel of the Fates from Death Star Dispatch, Qui-Gon checking Anakin's blood for midichlorians. And Qui-Gon,
I like midichlorians. I've always liked midichlorians.
I thought, you know, the conversations, a lot of people take issue with the midichlorian thing. I really don't.
I don't love it,
but I like the mystical and aspect of the Force and spiritual aspect a little more than the scientific kind of explanation behind it, but I don't have a problem with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot of great responses to that poll, just some favorite moments from the Phantom Menace. And Adam, can you tell us what's coming up on this week's show?
Yeah, we got some news this week. I thought it was a light news and light news week, and then I went back and started looking at some stuff, and it was not really a light news week. So but we got some stories to talk about there, and then we're going to jump into the second part of Thank the Maker, which is going to be Attack of the Clones. So without further ado, if you're ready, we'll jump into news.
Well, you want the bad news or the really bad news?
So first up in the news this week from The Hollywood Reporter, Jon Favreau gave an update on The Mandalorian Season 2. There's not much new here, Adam.
Right.
There were a couple things that I wanted to pick out of here and maybe talk about a little bit. But there was a virtual panel for the ATX Television Festival moderated by Vanity Fair's Anthony Resnickan. And Jon Favreau was quoted as saying, thanks to how technology forward Lucasfilm and ILM are, we've been able to do all of our visual effects and editing and post-production remotely through systems that have been set up by those companies for us. So they're on track basically for the October release of The Mandalorian Season 2. One thing that I thought was interesting was, Favreau noted that due to the rigors of the TV schedule, Season 2 feels like a continuation of Season 1 rather than a new thing, which I expected.
I
think that's appropriate. I mean, I think there's a story left to be told, a continuation of what was happening at the end of Season 1. Moff Gideon, the Darksaber, baby, the child, and what the child's fate will be. And everything like that.
So with that, do you think that there's going to be a time skip here, or do you think it's going to kind of just pick up right off as they're leaving. I'm blanking on the name of the planet they're leaving.
Was it Navarro or a different
one?
Yeah,
I think it was Navarro. That sounds right.
Yeah. You know, I if there is a time jump, I would say it'll probably be not a lot of time will have passed, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple months or something like that, if I had to guess, but
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't think it would be a major time jump, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
What do you think? You agree?
Yeah, I agree. I almost think that it'll, I don't know if there'll be any time pass at all. I mean, it might, like, even a couple months for me,
yeah, could,
seems a little long. I don't know.
It could pick up.
The Mandalorian, right after, yeah. Especially the first season, just felt like it just felt like one long day, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, it just, the way each episode flowed into each other and how each, like, I know some people thought it felt disconnected, but once you watch it all together back to back, if you have like 3.5 hours to do that,
yeah,
it feels like one story. And so I think that, you know, it makes sense for chapter two to pick up right after.
Yeah,
that, so.
I think certain episodes play with different genres and everything and make, but it's definitely a continuous connected story. You know what I mean? And Taika Waititi was also a part of this interview, and he had said that he was asked about his Star Wars film, and he said it's finished, he's done. You know, it's jokingly, of course. But yeah, we still have to look forward to his movie sometime in a few years down the road.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about everything from that Hollywood Reporter article, and also moving on, connected to the Mandalorian, we had actually a music video that was released. Ludwig Göransson, who is the composer for the Mandalorian music, released a music video of kind of him playing all these different instruments with the Mandalorian main theme. And I thought it was just so interesting that he started just with a recorder that you would use in elementary school. You know what I mean? And just getting back to these simple, kind of organic feeling sounds, and then building from that, pulling the guitar in, you know, finally pulling an orchestra in later, you know what I mean? Like throwing all these different things in there. So did you see this music video?
I did.
Cause I thought it was great.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Starts off kind of reminds me of that episode of Disney Gallery where, you know, he's just kind of recording in his house or apartment or whatever, wherever he lives.
Yes.
And then it kind of almost gets into him being in the volume and in the sets, some of the main sets that you see through the show. And it was a cool music video.
Yeah, it was really cool just to see that. And if you haven't seen that yet, I know it's on the Star Wars YouTube page. You can check it out there. When it comes to books and comics, we had actually an excerpt released for Thrawn Ascendancy Chaos Rising. Did you read this excerpt yet, Adam?
I didn't have a chance to read the excerpt yet, no.
Okay.
I want to. Like every time I see these, and I did this with Light of the Jedi, but every time I see these, I'm like, I don't really want to read this. I just want to wait, you know? But
yeah, because you don't want...
So I don't usually jump on these very fast.
Right. Yeah, I can totally understand that. But that is on the horizon. I know you're excited about that, that book coming out.
Yeah,
so.
Very much.
Yeah. And finally, for our news for this week, we have Star Wars books at Del Rey Star Wars on Twitter had posted the final roster of 40 authors for From a Certain Point of View Strikes Back. And I didn't know if any of those names kind of stood out to you or if you were excited about any in particular that are on this list.
For me, I mean, I almost feel bad. I mean, some of the names that I'm not really familiar with. So I'm kind of excited for the ones that I know, you know, John Jackson Miller and Kevin Scott and Delilah S. Dawson, you know, names like that, I guess names that are familiar because they've written other Star Wars stuff.
Right.
In recent memories, Zoraida Cordova's on there. So those are the names I think that excite me the most. But I'm excited to see what everyone else, you know, brings to the table, too. So the stories that they tell.
Yeah, I was actually excited to see Gary Whitta on there, who was a writer on Rogue One. And him coming into this, I think will be interesting. I'm curious to see what that's all about. That's the one that really jumped out to me. But yeah, I don't know if anybody out in the chat, if there are certain authors you're looking forward to hearing from, and from a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back. But that will just, and I did see that Claudia Gray is absent from this list. Did you notice that? Unless I missed it.
No, I didn't. I didn't look at the list closely, but I don't remember seeing her. So,
yeah, I was a little sad to see that Claudia Gray was not on this list. Because she, you know, she always has some of my favorite stuff, you know, and she writes. Right. So a little disappointing, but I'm sure we'll get some great different points of view in this story.
For sure.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for the news this week. And I think we are ready to dive into behind the scenes. Thank the Maker, Attack of the Clones edition.
Thank the Maker. This oil bath is going to feel so good.
Brand new bumper there.
So Adam, you mentioned it. And as soon as you said there's a brand new bumper, I knew it was going to be that. I'm very pleased.
Yep. It wasn't a surprise, but it was worth it. So last week we talked a lot about Phantom Menace, and then this week I guess that means we're moving on to Attack of the Clones, number two. So like we mentioned last week, you know, the Thank the Maker is really just kind of going through and giving some of our favorite little behind the scenes stories and, you know, just kind of throwing some appreciation to the cast and to the people involved in making these movies that we talk about every week. So, like I said last week, this isn't really going to be like a comprehensive behind the scenes look. So there's a good chance that we're not going to be saying anything that is like earth shattering here. So, but I just hope that maybe you use these as a catalyst to go back and, you know, go read some books about, you know, this process for this movie, other movies, check out some documentaries, listen to some audio commentaries, things like that, just to, you know, hopefully this serves as an entry point into you learning more about behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, I've been enjoying doing this series so far, Adam, just because I've really been enjoying going back and listening to these audio commentaries and just hearing again George Lucas talk about the films, because I feel like it's been a while since I've heard from George Lucas. You know what I mean? So it's nice to hear him talk Star Wars.
Yeah, it definitely is. And there's times where I just listen to him talk and just have to laugh. And it's just...
Oh, I know.
It's like he just gets himself lost sometimes, I think.
He does.
And going back to Naboo, I heard a lot of Naboo this week, but I also heard some Dooku.
Dooku, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. He puts that emphasis on that last syllable. Yeah. Dooku or something. It's interesting. But yeah, so starting off with the cast, one of the first things I heard Natalie Portman talk about was how she felt more free playing Padme this time, and it's because she wasn't the queen this time. You know, she's not in the makeup, she's not in the dress. Right. You know, she's kind of just her doing her own thing, and so she felt a little more liberated in this movie than last movie, which I can see. I think I can easily see that, you know, scenario where that queen's outfit would be a little bit restricting. So,
yeah, and related to that, you know, I remember watching last night and hearing Ewan McGregor talking about how, you know, Obi-Wan isn't as straight of a character in this one. You know, he kind of gets a little witty and everything in there too, and has a little bit more confidence now that he's the Jedi Master and not the Padawan, and he might have felt a little more freedom in that role as well. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Samuel L. Jackson, this is interesting, and I want to talk about this a little bit. He views Mace as this kind of pure, unadulterated good guy.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Interesting. because you hear a lot of talk about how Mace kind of almost flirts with the dark side sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to hear him talk about him that way. That's how he interprets it. And you know, maybe he's just not used to playing a character like that. He's used to playing a more tough guy character.
I was going to say, maybe compared to his other roles, you know, this is a good guy, right. You know, this unadulterated good guy.
But where he's not really going to be throwing out a lot of MFers in this role, you know, he's like, so this is maybe like a little bit more of a good guy role for him. So I don't know if it's a perspective thing. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah.
So I thought that was very interesting to hear him say that. Now I actually had to rewind to make sure I heard him say that right and make sure he wasn't talking about someone else, you know?
Right.
Because I don't really view Mace as that unadulterated good guy, you know?
He can be a little bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
You know?
And maybe that's perspective on my part from seeing Clone Wars and things like that, you know?
Right. But, you know... Cam Ray is saying in the chat, watch Shaft the other night. Mace is a freaking saint. So
fair enough.
There you go. But yeah, I mean, different points of view on the character of Mace Windu.
Yeah. Ewan McGregor mentioned that he was doing his best, really, to imitate Alec Guinness this time around. And George had even commented on how, so after some scenes, he got the same impression. That was very Guinness-y to coin that term. But
yeah, I'm wondering which like line that was, you know, that he was delivering. That
I don't know.
Reminded George of Alec Guinness.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. He didn't actually say that specifically, and it almost sounded like it happened multiple times. So
maybe, yeah.
But I mean, I can see some Alec Guinness in what he did in episode two, especially, you know, he's kind of on his own a little bit in this episode doing some detective stuff and, you know, just in some of the mannerisms that he has this time around, I can see more of Alec Guinness in this than I did in episode one.
Yeah. And I will say that, as far as the Obi-Wan storyline goes, it's George Lucas talks a lot, and we'll probably talk about this in a little bit, but he talks about how he intercuts different stories, you know, and following Obi-Wan, I find Obi-Wan's story to be the most interesting in this movie, in the whole mystery and the whole detective, you know, and I think we're going to get into that whole film noir thing. And that whole aspect of it, the mystery of the creation of the clones and Sifo Dyas. I always found that very compelling and very interesting.
Yeah.
And a little bit different for Star Wars, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And we'll get into this more later, but Ewan also had said that the part on Kamino just about drove him crazy because he's basically in a blue box by himself for days on end, you know? So much of that, and until he really meets up with Jango and works with Temuera a little bit. That's really just him by himself the whole time, you know, that, and that's all put in later.
I'm sure he's going to love filming for the Obi-Wan series, given the fact that they're going to probably be using the volume and not having to be in a blue box. You know, he's going to be able to have surroundings around him, the screens, the set built into that. And,
you know, that's one of the things that as you go back through this stuff, that's one of the things that everyone talks about. All of the actors that are involved in this movie, that's what they talk about, is being on a blue screen the whole time.
And the difficulty of doing that.
So the volume just has to be just groundbreaking in terms of what the difference that it provides in that, you know. And then we can talk about this more later, but you know, seeing them back into the Jedi Council chamber, and just now that I see how they're doing that light wrapping thing, that's all I can see, you know. You know, how they're adding that light in behind them all the time.
I know it, and it looks weird, you know, when you see it now, you know. What I mean.
But then, like you said, that's not a problem anymore with the volume,
right?
You know, you film
you get that natural lighting coming off of it
into the volume, and then it's just there, you know. It's right. So
I think it's just super cool that this is all coming full circle for Ewan McGregor, and he gets a chance to play this role again and do it in this way. So
yeah,
excited for him.
We had some fun cameo appearances here, which is something that's always fun to pick out in Star Wars. But we had two here. In one scene, Ahmed Best and Anthony Daniels are in the sports bar on Coruscant. Ahmed Best is kind of with they kind of both happen roughly around the same time, you know, as the dismembering, which George talks about that a lot too. That's another one of those beats that he uses.
Another one of those echoes and that is using repeated. Some type of club Obi-Wan, taking echoes out somebody's appendage in a club or bar or cantina.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they're both right around that dismembering scene. Ahmed Best is kind of with a group in the back at a table, and Anthony Daniels kind of turns and looks over his shoulder as it happens. Mm-hmm. You actually see him twice pretty quick, but yeah. So if you didn't know that, be on the lookout for Ahmed Best and Anthony Daniels in the sports bar. And then I want to talk about Christopher Lee a little bit, because this is his entry into Star Wars, into a character that we're still learning more about, you know. Mm-hmm. As time goes on with Clone Wars and audio dramas and things like that. So, Christopher Lee's, you know, prior to like maybe when he started really getting back into major productions around the, you know, around this time, 2000, 2002, with Lord of the Rings and then with, Attack of the Clones here, was really mainly known for like his horror roles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He played Dracula a few times, so then he comes into this role, and it's a villain, but it's a very different type of villain, I think, than what he's used to playing. And I didn't write down the quote, but I'm pretty sure he talked about this a little bit in the audio commentary tracks. I don't know if you wrote that down at all, but he talked about how this wasn't really his normal role, you know, and it's almost
right.
It echoes a little bit of Saruman in Lord of the Rings, you know, the good wizard that ended up falling, you know, to the bad guy wizard type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But even in this, it's a little more reserved. And George talked about a little bit how that he wanted this kind of intrigue or, you know, mystery around this particular character. Is he bad? You know, how, you know, where does he fall in all this? Mm-hmm. Because we don't want him to be like, okay, he's definitely the bad guy right now, you know, but we find out through this movie and then through the first part of the third movie, that he is that person. But, so it's a very different role for him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost a shame that he didn't get more time in that, you know?
I agree. I think he's great as Count Dooku and also as Saruman the White. I mean, Christopher Lee is just, he was a fantastic actor, you know. And I loved what he brought to both of those characters. And you know, with Count Dooku, he isn't your typical like villain. Yeah, he's kind of, and even in that scene where he is holding Obi-Wan and talking and talking to him in that scene, and wanting him to join him and destroy the Sith. Like, it's interesting how George Lucas sees that scene. He sees it as Dooku is seriously trying to get Obi-Wan to join him to eliminate Sidious. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I have watched that movie, I always took that scene was he's just messing with Obi-Wan. You know what I mean? Like, he's not, because he and Sidious have this plan that they're going to follow through. I never saw that as a serious attempt to, to turn Obi-Wan. You know what I mean?
Right. But I do think Christopher Lee was just perfect for this role.
Oh yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
just like you said, I read something this week. He never really wanted to be the romantic, you know, handsome type good guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think he was perfectly cast for that role. Just kind of wish that he got a little more time, between this and then just, you know, meeting his end pretty quick in three. But I'm very glad that we've gotten more of him, just not, you know, Christopher Lee, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Christopher Lee is just, it's been about 5 years since we lost him, but I loved everything that he did, even down to his, he did Metal when he was in his 90s, you know, putting out metal CDs and albums, and metal Christmas music, and just he was an amazing guy, and it's pretty cool that we get to have him as part of our Star Wars universe. So,
for sure.
All right, moving on to some of the filming and production, little tidbits that we have here, I guess. The speeder chase scene with Anakin and Obi-Wan, as they're chasing down Zam, Wessel, and Coruscant was very interesting, in that they had to set up the entire planet at that point. You know, we know that Coruscant's a city planet, but this is the time where they had to set up these different districts and these, you know, different parts of this planet to make it look alive, you know.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of little Blade Runner references and some inspiration at that point. You know, I think Episode Two. In my younger days, I loved Episode Two, and I've kind of grown away from it a little bit.
Same here.
And a lot of it was because of this, you know, setting up this entire city planet, you know. So
yeah, I was always fascinated in Coruscant, and like when I was younger, you know, and especially like the underground kind of Coruscant, you know, the criminal underworld that you know, we get into a little bit of that with level 13 and everything.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
You know, I was always very interested in that, in the different aspects of Coruscant.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, you get so much of this as I'm going back and listening to audio commentary and stuff. And again, this is to the credit of the technology at the time. But so many things are digital in this that I didn't know were digital, you know.
Right.
Going back, talking again about that speeder chase scene, there's a part as Anakin is kind of slipping off the... of Zam's speeder, where the top half of him is real and the bottom half of him is CG. And
yeah, like, I had no idea.
I had no idea either, which is, like I said before, it's a credit to what they did, you know, that we complained a lot about this, about these movies being overly CG'd. And you know, when you go back and find out just how much of it is CG'd, then yeah, I mean that probably
there's an argument to be made there, but sure. You know.
But a lot of the stuff and what they did is just pretty incredible, especially 20 years ago.
And I think with George's vision and what he wanted to do, and how he wanted to, you know, again we go back to the world building and just some of the things that are done in the films. He had to use that technology basically to accomplish what he wanted to. So
yeah. You had mentioned some intercut stuff, so why don't you talk a little bit about Empire here?
Yeah, you know, again, George just repeating these beats and repeating these themes, and the way that he kind of splits up the action, and you know, he has this kind of trademark thing where if you look at The Empire Strikes Back, which is this, of course, this kind of the second act of the trilogy, and Attack of the Clones as well. He separates the characters and then intercuts their stories. So in Empire, you have this love/action story with Han and Leia in the Falcon, and then intercut with Luke's training in this kind of, you know, mythological discussions about the Force and philosophical conversations and everything. So you have those intercut. And then Attack of the Clones, you have, again, a love story that's intercut with a mystery, you know, with Obi-Wan surrounding the creation of the clones and everything. So it's something that he intentionally does to try to kind of balance those things out. And, you know, of course, I think a lot of people probably prefer the love story between Han and Leia over the one, you know, with Anakin and Padme. But, you know, there's a reason he's doing those things.
Yeah, Cam says in chat here that he remembers being a member of Star Wars Hyperspace, which I don't remember that, or whatever it was called, and would log in every day and watch the live filming of the prequels. And I didn't know that was a thing, or I would have
me neither.
Definitely loved to have checked that out. I said it was just all giant green rooms, and at the time it was great, which is pretty. Yeah, I mean, I think that would have been really cool to see that as giant green rooms and to wonder, you know, what's going to be happening here? Where is this going to be going? You know, but
yeah.
But yeah, for the actors, that had to just be a pain in the butt a lot of times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, we mentioned before about how the Obi-Wan story has elements of film noir. And so one of the things that I've done this week is kind of go back and check out what film noir is, you know, which I knew what film noir was. But just kind of go back
level,
and, and just to learn a little bit more about it. But yeah, and you've mentioned on the show before how Obi-Wan's story is really just a, you know, it's a detective story for him, you know?
Yep.
Really after the Coruscant scenes, he's on his own and he's tracking down this assassin. And then it all kind of comes together at the end, on Geonosis. But yeah. So this is kind of Lucas again, really referencing some of, I don't know if maybe they'd be like his favorite genres or stories, but he always talks about Star Wars being like this, this echo of like a 1930s serial type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this episode, this is kind of his homage to, you know, the 40s and 50s and 60s film noir type story. So it gets Obi-Wan doing something different and interesting.
And I think it works pretty well.
Yeah, it gives Ewan some time to do stuff on his own, which I think is important for his character, but then also kind of one of those things that allowed us to kind of grow with him more, you know? So, but yeah. And then talking about homages, Dex's Diner is actually George's little nod to American Graffiti, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So he wanted that set in a diner with a Dex type character. And, you know, that was really just him nodding back to American Graffiti. Ben Burtt, I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Ben Burtt was a sound designer for the film. And this is actually one of my favorite parts of the prequel trilogy as a whole, is the seismic charges. And the asteroid scene.
I love that and he said part that, too.
Yeah, this is really where, for him, the sound effects got to have their spotlight, you know?
Uh-huh. I love how there's that moment of silence.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it's really cool.
And he described that as an audio black hole in space, you know, where for that particular second, all of the audio is just kind of trapped in this black hole and pulled in. And then after that second, it just kind of pushes back and just, you know, kind of destroys everything in its path. They said that took a little bit. They actually cut the music for most of that scene, and it doesn't kick back in until right around the time of the last missile.
Yeah.
But that actually took a little convincing to let George and even John Williams, kind of just cut the music for that whole section, you know?
Yeah. And I think they did the same thing during the pod race in episode one, where the music is cut out for some moments in there just to allow the sound effects and the sound and everything to come through.
And you know what? And I forget who said it, but you don't actually get a lot of, for Star Wars being Star Wars, you don't actually get a lot of these like space battle scenes, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. There's not as many of them as you would think, you know?
Yeah. So this is one of the few dogfight scenes you actually really get in Star Wars, which, you know, for that being the focus of so many games and things like that, and then you have the whole X-Wing book series, and now we have Alphabet Squadron, you know, it's interesting that we focus so much on that when in the films you don't get it that whole lot, you know?
Not a whole lot, no.
So.
Yeah.
And just another interesting thing, the Lars Homestead here, it was filmed in the exact same location as A New Hope, so they actually had to go back and find out. And I don't remember if we talked about this last week, but they did mention this in Phantom Menace also, where they actually had to find where that was because they didn't keep very good records of where they were back then.
Right.
But they actually did end up finding where it was. And so, yeah, the Lars Homestead was filmed in the exact same place. So
And I guess that sinkhole was still there and everything that
yeah.
mm-hmm. that they use. So interesting.
Yep. So moving on to tech to the technology of this film, you know, this film is really when, you know, episode one used a lot of this digital, the CG film, the CG effects and things like that. But this is when it really kicked into gear. You know, I think that they learned, mm-hmm. okay, we can do this. And so they really leaned on it in this film. One of the things I watched was a documentary called George Lucas on the Digital Revolution. And in it, he said that all art is based on how far you can push the technology. So, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, I think this is where they were really pushing the technology, seeing where they yeah. could take this now that they found out that they could do it. This was the first movie to be shot entirely in a digital format.
Yeah, I was just going to say that because when you mentioned that, you know, because they got comfortable, a little mm-hmm. more comfortable with it in Phantom Menace, and then they, you know, shot all digital for Attack of the Clones. Yeah. And,
yeah.
And I remember actually going down to the Omnimax Theater mm-hmm. at the Science Center to watch Attack of the Clones. That was, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, this is one of those things. He also mentioned in this documentary about this 10-year gap, you know, between the introduction of a technology and when people actually just start to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really true in this. I mean, how many films are shot digitally now as opposed to when he was doing this back then?
Right.
And I don't know if it was 10 years, but it definitely took Hollywood some time to come around to this idea, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think it takes some time for everyone else to catch up once these pushes in technology are made.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see here. One of the interesting things I found out about this, the paintings that they would use to kind of visualize or conceptualize, or, you know, we look at concept art nowadays, but mm-hmm. they actually, these concept art paintings, a lot of sometimes actually ended up going from just being a storyboard element to almost being used in the film, you know. So this, they actually got this to a point where these paintings could be just handed over to the animatics department and they could really just use those paintings to just create a rough cut of the film. And a lot of times that mm-hmm. rough cut was just, you know, kind of enhanced and built upon to get to the yeah. final film. One of the places that they showed this happening is on Geonosis, as Anakin and Padme are being carted out.
Mm-hmm.
You can see how they used really just a painting, just like a concept art shot to really just bring that whole scene to life, and do that, you know, through computer graphics. So
yeah, it's fascinating stuff. You know, just the way that works.
Yep. And then the last thing that we can talk about a little bit is Digital Yoda. This is really the first time that Digital Yoda was used on screen as well.
Right, right.
And it's interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, you know, they couldn't have done a puppet Yoda with what happens with
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
especially that lightsaber duel.
Yeah. But it goes really back to Jar Jar, you know. Once they found out they could do this with characters like Jar Jar and Watto,
mm-hmm.
You know, then they really just leaned in on this and started doing this with Yoda. And they mentioned how they studied, you know, what Frank Oz had done with the puppet in terms of facial expressions and even what would happen with his ears as he would move mm-hmm. them, how they would twitch a little bit. And so they had to add that type of stuff in just to make it feel, you know, like it did with the puppet. But facial expressions and even how Frank Oz would kind of make him limp as he walked. And that's, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
how they got that walk that they use with the cane. They really wanted it to look just like the puppet, only upgraded, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was great getting to see Yoda as a warrior. You know, that's kind of, you know, mentioned
yeah.
in
yeah.
The Empire Strikes Back when Luke's going to find this warrior, you know, and we get to see that happen in this film.
One of the things I thought was very interesting is they, in the scene where Mace and Obi-Wan and Yoda are walking through the temple, and Yoda's on his little hover chair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talked about needing a way for Yoda to keep up with them because he's so slow and old.
Yeah.
I'm like, well,
just, yeah. Just...
Does he really need that? Because in like an hour, he's going to kick some butt, you know?
Right, right. So... I guess he really had to channel the force to
yeah.
drop that cane yeah, and get into action. Up, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
It's just kind of fun. Like, I'm not actually complaining about that. I know that that's, you know, the explanation for what he did later.
Right.
it just always strikes me as funny that he's so yeah, old and slow funny. And then all of a sudden he just yeah. opens up. But you know, right. really that lightsaber battle just really just kind of became a hallmark moment for him, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Even though it gets a little ridiculous and
it does, but
it's fun.
It's fantastic.
You know, that, and,
yeah, it's fun.
And that's what
it's,
it yeah. needs to be at the end of the day. It needs to be something that's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely, we said this in chat, and I think you said it on live before, but I really enjoyed going back and just watching more of the audio commentaries, you know?
Yeah.
And watching some documentaries and just seeing, getting that appreciation back, you know? Because it's been
Absolutely.
So long since I've gone back and watched some of the special features for these movies.
Yeah, and I'm sure at one point or another I listened to these commentaries probably, but it's been so long, you know, that I forget, and it's just nice to revisit that. So I'm really glad we're doing this Thank the Maker series for sure.
I was never a huge audio commentary guy. So, like, I remember some of these things, so I must have watched them somewhere along the line.
Mm-hmm.
But if I did, like I said before, it's been so long that I didn't remember any of it, like in detail, you know? So,
yeah, I'm always really interested in like hearing the filmmakers' explanations behind certain things and everything. Mm-hmm. And like sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get some answer to some question I have if I'm listening to what they're saying about it. And sometimes you get little answers here and there.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And George gave a few answers, and he talked about the you know, my favorite scene, the fireside chat with Anakin and Padme.
Mm-hmm.
I've never hidden how I feel about that scene because I hate it.
Yeah, I mean,
but he talked
I think
about
he was,
that, and
he
said,
was going for I think going for like Shakespearean type situation there, but it just
yeah, and he talked about it yeah. how you know he was going. It's supposed to be that it's supposed to be, overly romantic and overly operatic.
Uh-huh.
I think is the word he used was operatic.
Right,
and I was like, okay. Okay, I get that.
Okay.
You know,
yeah,
So, you know, maybe that'll help me a little bit. You know, maybe it won't be mm-hmm. so. Because I mean, it's rough.
Well,
it's cheesy as hell.
I think
you know,
it is cheesy. But yeah. I think if you have to consider maybe the time period of this is a more formal time. You know, with the Jedi Order being
that's true.
The Republic
that's
and everything. So I think, you know, they spoke a little more formally than in the
point.
Original trilogy. You know, so that. Not that it excuses it entirely, but I think it helps make a little more sense of that dialogue.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Danny's in chat, and she says she loves Attack of the Clones. It's her favorite PT film, and actually top five all-time Star Wars films, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Loves the politics, and it stands up particularly strong now that the Skywalker saga is complete.
I think there's a lot of great political intrigue.
I was just
going to
say, I
prequels.
Love the politics in these get drug through the mud, but I love the politics.
Well,
these.
You can
it
appreciate it
said.
More when you get a little older. You can appreciate it more than you know.
Yeah.
When I was a kid watching these, I didn't care about the political stuff, but now it's interesting. You know what I mean?
I kind of have all along, and I mean, it has to be part of it. You're talking not just about mm-hmm. the fall of Anakin, but you're talking about the rise of an empire.
The rise of the empire.
So how does that happen? It doesn't just happen overnight. It has to, you know, there has to be these little things, and it starts with something as small as a trade route dispute. And then that lets someone like Palpatine kind of edge his way into things. And then, you know, this movie is really him cementing his power and staying in power. Lucas mentioned... they talk about term limits in this movie. I think specifically for Padme,
mm-hmm.
And how she you know, kind of went chose to go back and serve after this. And yeah. So that was actually in there as like a direct, you know, a direct opposition to what Palpatine is doing, where he's also facing term limits, but he's finding a way to stay in power.
And it increases, you know, power, really.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And it was fascinating to me. Just first of all, I think Palpatine's grand master plan is just brilliant in the way mm-hmm. that it plays out in these movies, and especially in Attack of the Clones. You know, just this vote from Jar Jar for these emergency mm-hmm. powers to be given to Palpatine. You know, and that's kind of the start of mm-hmm. how you get to an emperor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, we talked about that last week. That's why Jar Jar is such an important character. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not just comic relief. I mean, yeah, that's what he's there for a lot of times, but that's not
right.
That's not his main role in these movies. He's there for a reason, playing that role for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know.
So yeah, good stuff.
Yep. So yeah, a lot of appreciation in the chat from Rural Farm Boy and Danny and Cam Ray for Attack of the Clones. And Cam says the Yoda Dooku fight got so pumped when it happened. And yeah, when I saw, I'll never forget, you know, being in the theater and seeing for that sure. shadow come around the corner.
Yeah.
I'm like, here we go. You know,
Yoda. Yeah, it was. I loved it.
I was probably what, 10th grade or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I remember I was actually going through physical therapy for my shoulder because I had dislocated my shoulder. And I remember every time I was in there, there'd be like a preview for Attack of the Clones on one of the little TVs they had hanging up. But I just remember being so excited for that movie at the time and seeing all the Jedi lighting up their lightsabers in the arena and everything, you know? So, yeah, good memories.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, man, that Yoda and Dooku fight was just, that got my blood pumping, you know?
Yep.
So.
For sure.
All right. Well, that wraps up Thank the Maker for Attack of the Clones. Are you ready to also wrap up episode 37?
Let's do it.
I'm just glad you're here. At the end.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to episode 37. We hope you enjoyed Thank the Maker, Attack of the Clones. I wanted to take a quick moment to thank everyone in chat. We had 2Med2, Michael from 2Med2, Cam Ray, Rural Farm Boy, Vader's Girl, Semper Fi Danny, Mr. Rez, Stephen Miller, Radio Rebellion, the Bosch Blog, which would be your wife, Brittany, I think. That takes care of everyone. If I missed you, I am very sorry. But thank you, everyone, for chatting with us. Remember, if you're here watching live, remember to hit the like button. If you haven't subscribed yet, hit the subscribe button. If you are listening live, or if you're just listening later and haven't subscribed to the podcast, do that, please. And if you are on a podcast app, like iTunes or Apple Podcasts, that lets you leave a review, do that as well. That helps us get out to more people and have more people find out what we're all about here. Check out the website FromACertainPointOfView.com. And remember, we got a new merch store up there that you can get to from the shop link on the top. There's also blog articles. There's also contact information there if you want to, you know, get in touch with us for any reason. Have an idea for a show, want to write a blog article, anything like that. Our socials are Twitter, CertainPOVPod. Facebook is From a Certain Point of View. Discord server link is in the show notes and also on the website. Email address is CertainPOVPod@gmail.com. And we are hosted by Anchor.fm, where you can leave a 60-second voicemail and you can, you know, chime in on your favorite aspects of Attack of the Clones, ask us a question, make a comment on a past episode, whatever you want to do. We'd be happy to play it here on the show. We are part of the Red 5 Network. Remember to check out red5network.com for all of the other great shows on the Red 5 Network. You can find me on the internet. Twitter is the best place, and I am at thegauze85 on Twitter. Josh, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JediJarJar1722. And I just want to say thanks again, everyone, for joining us today. It was a great conversation diving back into the prequels and thanking the makers of these films. Keep a lookout on our Twitter page for the weekly poll, as always. And just thanks so much for being a part of From a Certain Point of View podcast. And remember that everything we said today was true.
From a Certain Point of View.